I changed wallets this week. I know that's not a big deal to you, but that was a pretty big deal to me. The one I had was starting to fall apart. Now, both Ashley and Lauren, a couple years ago, got me new wallets for Christmas. So when the one I was using started to fall apart, I already had a new one sitting in a drawer. So I changed wallets, and I saw something that I hadn't seen in a long time. And as I transferred all the stuff from the old one to the new one, I saw it again, and I remembered. This has been in my wallet for nearly 40 years. 40 years! Can you believe that? Why in the world would I keep something in my wallet for 40 years? I've had it in my wallet since August 7th, 1978. So for almost 40 years, I've had it in there. And every time I got a new wallet, I took it out and put it in the new one. I don't have any clue how many wallets I've had over the 40 years. But every time I made sure I would pick this out of the old one and put it back into the new one. It's one of those cards that they set out at funeral homes, which you pick up when you go to a visitation or the funeral of someone. It's really faded now, and it's starting to fall apart, especially on where the folds and all of that. You see, this is a 40-year-old card from my grandfather's funeral. If you were to look inside the card, you would read the 23rd Psalm on one side of it. And on the other side, you would read these words. Memory of Albert Ray Keach, born August 19th, 1902. So he would have been almost 116 years old. Date of death, August 3rd, 1978, in Eloise, Michigan. You'd read the name of the funeral home in Flat Rock, Michigan. You'd read the name Reverend George Cook, the pastor who officiated at his funeral, and you'd also read the name of the cemetery where my grandfather, Albert Keach, was buried. You see, I've carried this in my wallet for all these years, and every so often I pull it out and I look at it. Now, why do I do that? I do it for one reason. I want to remember. You see, after 40 years, I can't remember what his voice sounds like any longer. I can't remember what his laugh sounded like. Oh, I remember that he used to laugh and joke around all the time. But I can't remember what his laugh sounded like. And if it wasn't for a few pictures that we still have, I don't think I'd remember exactly what he looked like. You see, my grandfather and I had the kind of relationship that every kid should have with a grandparent. He really was special to me. When my family would go over to his house, which was usually about once a week, as I was growing up, I would inevitably get into trouble for picking on and teasing my sisters, and my folks would bring down the gavel and sentence me to solitary confinement in the car. And oh, how I hated solitary confinement. Not enough to quit teasing my sisters, mind you, but it did drive me crazy. But I wouldn't be in the car very long at all, and my grandpa would come up and open the door and say, "I got a job for you, Freddie." And we'd go off and do whatever job that might be. It may have been cleaning his gutters or hoeing the garden or picking tomatoes. And he would always stay with me, and the two of us would do whatever the job was. And for whatever reason, I liked the fact that I was pretty sure he never checked with my parents if it was okay that he commuted my sentence. So I always thought I was getting away with something. And the older I got, I'd spend more time with him. I'd spend time in the spring with him, helping him get his couple acres of land ready for planting, and then I'd help him plant his garden. And in the summer, I'd go over and help tend the garden and work the roadside vegetable stand they had. And in the fall, I'd bring in the harvest from that time of the year, and then I'd help prepare the garden for the winter. Even in the winter time, when he'd be sitting in his chair with this burpee seed catalog for what seemed like hours on end, he'd always ask me what things I thought we should try growing that coming spring. Taught me how to drive his tractor, and he bought a riding lawnmower for his yard because I thought it would be cool to drive one. He gave me the privilege that he didn't give any of the other grandkids. I could go into the garden anytime I wanted to, pick the fresh strawberries or tomatoes or grapes or carrots, and I could eat as much as I wanted. I just couldn't waste what I had picked. And oh, when the cantaloupes were right, every night when I was there with him, he'd pick up a big old ripe melon, cut it in half, clean up inside, fill up my half and his half with vanilla ice cream, and we'd sit in the kitchen together listening to the Detroit Tiger ball game and eat our ice cream and melon. It doesn't get much better than that in life, folks. That is it. And then when my parents would come and pick me up after the weekend stay, he'd always pat me on the back and tell me what a good job he had done and slip $10 into my hand, which made me feel like the richest kid in the world. Loved my grandfather. And even though I was 22 years old when he died, I wanted to make sure I remembered him. So at the funeral, I picked up one of these cards and slipped it in my wallet. And for nearly 40 years now, I've carried it with me. And ever so often, I pull it out and I read it slowly and I remember. And when I do that, when I take those moments to remember, somehow it's like I'm right there again. I can smell the freshly cut watermelon. I can see his strong, leathery hands. I can see the straw hat on the nail by the back door. I can still remember the joy and the contentment I had in those days working with my grandfather, just being with him. Such is the power of memory. That's true whether we're talking about good memories or bad memories. The kind of memories you have, what you are choosing to remember, will make a powerful impact on who you are today and tomorrow and next week and next year. I think it's so significant that Dr. Luke, when he wrote about Jesus' arrest and his trials and his death and finally his resurrection, Dr. Luke, over and over again, told about those who remembered something which then triggered a memory within them and caused them to respond. In Luke 22, when he was telling about Peter's denial, right after the third and final denial, right after Peter did what he bragged he would never do, right after he used profane and vile language and he cursed to prove he wasn't a follower of Jesus, the rooster crowed. And evidently, right at that very moment, Jesus was being led across the courtyard from one trial to the next, because Luke said right at that precise moment, the Lord turned and looked straight toward Peter. Their eyes met. No words were spoken. No words needed to be spoken. It was as if Jesus could see into the very soul of Peter. And all of a sudden, Peter realized what he did, because he remembered. In fact, Luke said, then Peter remembered the word the Lord had spoken to him. Before the rooster crows today, you will disown me three times. And in that terrible, horrible moment of remembering, Luke says, and he, Peter, went outside and wept bitterly. Peter remembered. And I think it's so significant that one of the first things the angels who were at the empty tomb told the small group of women who had showed up to take care of the body, one of the very first things they said to the woman there was, remember. They said, remember how he told you? And then they were told to go back to the disciples and tell them the same thing. Remember how he told you? I find it thought-provoking that what Jesus told the women and what he told them then to tell the disciples was to remember. We know how the disciples were absolutely consumed with fear and remembering their own failures and their own broken promises. And Jesus was saying to them, you need to choose what you're going to be remembering, guys. You need to remember what I want you to remember. Now, I'm most interested in that small group of women who made their way to the tomb on that Sunday morning. I want us to look at Luke's account of that morning. And I want us to realize what those women, in spite of their own memories, had to overcome. And then because they did that, they were the first to see the empty tomb. And they were the first to see the risen Savior. They were the first to experience their overwhelming sorrow being transformed into great, almost indescribable joy. So let's read Luke's account from chapter 24. On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took the spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb. But when they entered, they did not find the body of Jesus. While they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. In their fright, the women bowed down to the ground, but the men said to them, why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He is risen. And then they said what became a life-changing word for them. Remember? Remember how he told you? While he was still with you in Galilee, the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men, be crucified, and on the third day be raised again. And I love the little commentary that Luke added to the story. Then they remembered his words. Because of that horrible, terrifying Friday, because of that absolute silent and dark Saturday, because they were lost in their emotions, they had not remembered what Jesus had told them. I don't even think they thought about what he had said to them and taught them. All they could think about was what they had seen on Friday, what they heard, what they felt. But still, these courageous women made their way out to the tomb on that Sunday morning. Just think about the obstacles they had to overcome to go to the tomb on that morning. And realize if they had chosen not to go, if they had done what they felt like doing, if they had done what the disciples had done, hide, they would not have met the angels who told them to remember. And they would not have seen the resurrected Lord. And they would not have had their deepest needs met on that very day. I want you to think about those obstacles they had to overcome. Because I know, I absolutely know that there are some that are sitting right here today that because of what you are choosing to remember from your past, ancient or recent, or because you remember what you did and you still can't believe it and the guilt is always there. Sometimes it's just below the surface. Or because you remember, all you remember is what was done to you by another. Because you are choosing to remember those kind of things and you can't seem to get beyond those things, you don't personally realize what the resurrection of Jesus Christ can mean for you this very day. So I want us to look first at what these women overcame. Let's look at the obstacles. The obstacles they overcame. And I suppose all throughout this sermon, I'll be asking you, are you willing to overcome the obstacles in your life to realize and experience the resurrection power of Jesus Christ? Are you willing to choose what you're going to remember so that you can experience all that God has for you? The very first obstacle they had to overcome was their own emotions. You have to know every emotion within them was screaming, "Don't go to the tomb, you fool. Why put yourself through that? Why subject yourself to more hurt? Why would you want to see his body after rigor mortis has started to set in? Why would you do that? Why would you even want to be reminded of what you saw Friday? Because that's what's going to happen when you see the holes in his hands and feet. When you see that black blood still caked on his forehead from where they shoved that crown of thorns down. When you see that gaping hole in his side. When you see his back that had been shredded by that cat of nine tails. You are going to relive Friday. Why go?" And it was not just those kind of emotions, but also great, great fear. What would others do to them? What if they got caught? And of course, there was guilt. There had to be. Incredible, suffocating guilt. Thinking that there must have been something they could have done to stop what happened. And maybe even more devastating was all the consuming doubt and disappointment that had to be filling their mind. They had been so sure that Jesus was the Messiah. But how could the Messiah be laying dead in a borrowed tomb? The easiest thing for them to do would have been to cave into their emotions and walk away. And just try to go back to their old way of living. Or just stay in that room hiding out with the other disciples. But instead, they overcame their emotions and walked to the tomb early in the morning. But not only did they overcome the obstacle of their emotions, secondly, their own expectations. They expected at best to be hassled and ridiculed by the guards who were guarding the tomb. They expected to not be able to roll the stone away from the entrance of the tomb. Mark tells us that they talked about those very things on their way to the tomb. He wrote, "Very early on the first day of the week, just after sunrise, they were on their way to the tomb and they asked each other, 'Who will roll away the stone entrance of the tomb?'" They expected a dead body. They expected decaying flesh. They expected revulsion as waves of stench and stink rolled their way and stuck to them. That they expected that their emotions, fragile already, would be absolutely shattered if they did get to see his broken body, and they started to wrap it with the spices and the strips of cloth they had brought with them. And you have to know, as they thought about what they expected to find on that Sunday morning, you have to know they were thinking, why even go? Why subject ourselves to all of that? After all, Joseph and Nicodemus, they've already used 75 pounds of spices. Surely that was sufficient. They didn't need to do anything else. But for some reason, these women didn't allow what they expected to find to stop them from going to the tomb on that Sunday morning. And then there was one other obstacle they had to overcome, and that was their enemy, the enemy of their soul. Now, some of the gospel writers tell us that Satan was trying to convince them not to go to the cemetery on that morning. But real life experiences tell us that he was there and he was waging all-out war against them. We're told how Satan entered Judas when Judas made the decision to betray Jesus. But we're not told that Satan was behind Peter being tempted to deny he knew the Lord. But we know he was. And we know he was right there whispering his beguiling voice, trying to convince these women not to go. You see, before they arrived at the tomb, Satan would have already known about the resurrection. So you just have to know he was doing everything in his power to keep it a secret. He didn't want anyone to find out about it. And he would be telling every lie. He would have been pulling every dirty trick he had out of his bag of deception, trying to convince those women not to go to the tomb. He wasn't able to stop the resurrection, but you can bet he was trying his best to stop this news from becoming public knowledge. Even convinced the guards to be the first reporters of fake news. Matthew tells us some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priests, not to the Roman commander like they should have, but to the chief priest, the Jewish chief priest. Some of the guards went into the city and reported to the chief priest everything that had happened, the angels, the earthquake, the stone rolling away, the empty tomb. Some of the guards went into the city, reported to the chief priest everything that had happened. When the chief priests had met with the elders, they devised a plan. They gave the soldiers a large sum of money, telling them, "You are to say, his disciples came during the night and stole him away while we were asleep." So the enemy definitely involved working overtime. And I don't know if those women realized the spiritual battle that was going on. I don't know if in that moment they realized the enemy of their soul was behind the internal struggle or not. But they still chose to overcome what they were feeling and thinking and expecting. And they went to the tomb. And because they went, the unexpected happened. The angel spoke, saying to them, "Remember how he told you, while he was still with you in Galilee, the Son of Man must be delivered into the hands of sinful men, be crucified, and the third day be raised again." And in that very moment, they remembered. And Matthew's the one who told us. So the women hurried away from the tomb, afraid, yet filled with joy, and ran to tell the disciples. And then he said, suddenly Jesus met them. Because they overcame their emotions and their expectation and the very enemy of their soul, they didn't just see an empty tomb. They didn't just see angels, but they saw the risen, reigning Jesus. They were the first to encounter the resurrected Jesus. And in that very moment, their overwhelming sorrow was instantly changed into joy. Okay, so what was it they chose to remember? Let's look at the opportunity they had to choose what they were going to remember. There were two choices, and these choices made all the difference for them. These two things made it possible in a moment in time, in a split second, they quit thinking about what they had seen on Friday. They quit thinking about their failures. They quit thinking about the failures of others and what others had done to them. They quit thinking about the mockery of the trials. They quit thinking about the scourging. They quit thinking about Jesus carrying the cross and how they were the ones shrieking in great grief. They quit thinking about the cross and the crucifixion, the insults, the spear, the death, the nails, the tears that had fallen. All the things they couldn't quit thinking about over the last 3 days. All the things that had kept them awake. And now in a split second in time, they chose to remember something else, and they were filled with joy. What did they remember? Two things. They remembered his words. They remembered the words of Jesus. The angel said, "Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He is risen." Remember how he told you? And Luke said, they remembered his words. They remembered that Jesus had said, this must happen. He didn't say it might happen or there's a danger that this could happen, but he said this must happen. And he didn't just say it once, but over and over and over again he told them. And the closer they got to the day, the more often he told them. After Peter made that great declaration that he believed that Jesus was the Christ, the Son of the living God, Matthew tells us. From that time on, Jesus began to explain to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things at the hands of the elders, chief priests, and teachers of the law, and that he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. And Mark in chapter 10 tells us that while they were on their way to Jerusalem, just days before Palm Sunday, just a week or so before the crucifixion, one more time, Jesus took them aside and reminded them what was going to happen when they got there. But I also think they didn't just remember that. They remembered the other words of Jesus. They remembered he said, "I am the bread of life. I am the living water. I am the good shepherd. I am the truth, the way, and the life." I think they remembered him saying, "I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you. But the Counselor, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you all things and will remind you of everything I have said to you. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Do not be afraid." I think they remembered those words of Jesus, and it began to make a difference in life. I also think they chose to remember his will, the will of God. Because Jesus said this must happen, they began to understand it didn't mean that it just happened because there was nothing you can do to stop evil men. They understood Jesus was telling them his death was part of God's will. This was all part of God's redemption plan. He was the Lamb of God that would take away the sins of the world. He came to die. That was the Father's will. And somehow when they remembered what Jesus said and they remembered that this was part of God's will and plan and purpose, as they remembered, they looked at everything differently. They looked at Friday differently. They looked at the cross differently. They looked at the denying, failing, frightened disciples differently. They looked at themselves differently. And in a moment when they remembered, they were filled with joy and they ran back to tell the others. Can you imagine that scene? When they get to the locked door, pounding on it for all they're worth, "Let us in, let us in." Out of breath, telling those skeptical, scared disciples, "Remember how Jesus told us all these things must happen? Yeah, we remember. Big deal. He's dead. But do you remember he said on the third day he would be raised to life? Well, we've just seen him. We've just seen Jesus. I'm telling you, he's alive." And Luke wrote, chapter 24, verse 11, "But they did not believe the women because their words seemed to them like nonsense." And I'm convinced that the disciples in that moment didn't really remember Jesus' words telling them that this was God's will. Well, let's get all of this to where you and I are living. Let's look at the obvious. Obviously, the story of the cross and the resurrection wasn't just meant for a small group of people back then, for a group of frightened disciples. But it's for us. It's for you and me. And there are two questions we need to ask ourselves. Number one, are you willing to overcome the obstacles in your life that are stopping you from remembering Jesus' words? Are you willing to overcome those obstacles that are stopping you from being in that place you need to be at so you can meet the resurrected Jesus and really allow him to meet your needs? I can't tell you the number of people I've known who have missed out on what God did for them because they allowed their emotions or their expectations, or the enemy of their soul to stop them from remembering what Jesus has said. They are absolutely consumed with remembering the rotten or hurtful past, and it controls them. It dominates their life. What this person did to them, or how they hurt them, or how they betrayed them, or what some other person didn't do for them. Or they're consumed with their own guilt and their own failure, their own sin, and they beat themselves up. And they have forgotten that Jesus has said, I have taken the punishment for your sin. By my wounds, you will be healed. I can make you as white as snow. I have the words of life. They have forgotten that Jesus has said, if you forgive, you'll be forgiven. They have forgotten that he said, I came to give life and life more abundant. They have forgotten that he said, if you love me, obey my commandments. They have forgotten that his word tells us he loves to cleanse the guilty conscience and to heal the deepest wound and to make us into new creations. I can't tell you the number of people I've seen who missed out on what God had for them because they allowed their own expectations to determine what they did or didn't do. So they didn't seek reconciliation because they didn't expect the other person to respond in a positive way. That they didn't tell their friend about Jesus because they didn't expect them to listen and respond. Or they had certain expectations of so-called Christians, and when those Christians didn't live up to their expectations, or when they flat out blew it and did the sinful and the hurtful, and their disappointment, great, they said, forget this whole Christian thing. And I can't tell you the number of people who have missed out on what God had for them because they haven't learned that Satan is a liar. And so when the enemy came and tempted, they thought they had to give in to the temptation because that's what the enemy said. They thought if you desire to do certain things, that's as bad as doing those things. And so they went ahead and did it because that's what the enemy told them. They believed it when the enemy whispered in their ear and said, you've been gone too long. You can't come back. You've done too many wrong things. There's no way anybody would forgive you. You can't come. They believed the enemy's lie. You see, folks, if we're going to be at a place where God can work the miraculous in our lives, we have to remember what he has said and be willing to obey. Are you willing to obey those things and overcome those things in your life that are stopping you from not only remembering Jesus' words, really seeing him and knowing him? And the second question we need to ask ourselves is, are you living in the very center of the will of God right now? Are you allowing him to reign in your life, in your relationships, in every aspect of your life? Do you realize because Jesus walked out of the tomb very much alive, you don't have to be the same. You don't have to be controlled by your emotions, expectations, or the enemy. That is not God's will for you. Your marriage does not have to be at a place of broken, harsh, brutal words all the time. That's not God's will. You don't have to be addicted. That's not God's will. You don't have to be consumed with self where you look at everything through eyes that think, what's in it for me? Why did they do that to me? I wonder what they think about me. That's not God's will for you. The important question is, are you living in the very center of God's will? Do you know the reality of him changing your sorrow or your fear or your guilt into joy? The important question is not, what do you remember? But rather, what are you choosing to remember? You can choose to remember the bad, or you can choose to remember Jesus' words to you. What are you choosing to remember? Let me share one more memory of my grandfather. I just told somebody about this story. As far as I know, he chose not to believe in the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ and that it meant anything for him personally. And even though I was his favorite grandson and he would do anything I ever asked of him, there was one thing he wouldn't do. He wouldn't ever attend a church service when I was preaching. I'd ask and he'd say no. He always had a good-sounding, plausible, logical excuse. I can't remember him telling me no about anything else. That this is a man who spent hours and hours with me, telling me stories, laughing, teaching me so many things about life. But I couldn't convince him to attend even one church service when I was preaching. I asked my mom why. It was her dad. I thought maybe she might know. And she told me she had never seen him in church either, except to attend her weddings. And she thought it had something to do with the story she heard one time. When he was about 17 or 18 years old, his family moved off their little farm in Missouri into the little town in their area. And his first Sunday in town, he decided he was going to go to church. Never been to church before, but he decided he was going to go to church. He put on his cleanest and best pair of overalls and went to church. He walked into the church on that Sunday morning, and somebody from the church came to him and said, "We don't wear clothes like that to church. Next time, wear some nicer clothes." Well, those were his very best already. And so he made a decision right then and there that he'd never go back into another church. And he lived the rest of his 6 years by that decision. When he thought about church and God, he chose to remember one thing: an insensitive, uncaring, stupid remark made by one person who called themselves Christian. After my grandfather's funeral, family all gathered back at my grandmother's, and I remember that afternoon taking a walk through the garden that I had helped plant and had taken care of. I remember picking up some dirt and rubbing it in my hands like I'd seen my grandfather do thousands of times, and then smelling it like I'd seen him do. And at that time, I could still remember what his voice sounded like. And it was as if I could hear my grandfather saying what I'd heard him say countless times before: "Ah, this is good dirt, best dirt in the county." But I also remember thinking, why wouldn't he ever come to Christ and believe? He had seen how Jesus had changed his son-in-law, my dad, from a drunk into a man of great faith and great integrity, great father and husband. He had seen him change his daughter, my mom, into a loving, caring mom and wife and daughter. He bragged about the changes in them. Why wouldn't he believe? I really think he simply made a choice about what he would remember. And I came away with a greater conviction than ever that I had to somehow convince others that Jesus' death and resurrection was real, and how he alone could change them, and he would forgive them, and he would set them free from whatever had enslaved them and held them captive, and they could choose what they were going to remember. Listen, there's a very real enemy out there, and there will always be people who will call themselves Christian who will disappoint us and maybe even hurt us with their unchristlike actions and words. There will always be circumstances and people that will cause our emotions to be all over the place. But folks, the tomb was empty. Remember? No one stole the body. No one overpowered the guards and took the corpse and hid it. Jesus walked out of that tomb alive. And because of that, because that was part of God's plan and purpose, no one has to say the same. The same power that raised a dead man back to life is available to you and me. I'm here to tell you that if you remember anything at all from being at church this morning, remember, his words are for you personally, and he has a will for you. He died for you. He can set you free. You may have walked in here bound up by emotions and fear and guilt and bad memories, but you can walk out of here a different person if you simply choose to accept his offer of grace, his offer of a new life. What will you choose to remember? Because he is risen, because he is alive, you can be transformed. What will you choose to remember? Bow your heads with me.